today, tonight, or today, tonight, or today. You are listening to the Distract and Disable Program, number 49. This might seem like all the other shows, but believe me, it's not. This is not some simple clone of a show. This is not some kind of ridiculous nighttime talk show cloning O'Brien or whatever. This is the real deal. This is Distract and Disable, where we've been distracting and disabling you for over 4 years. How do you like them apples? Those genetically modified apples? Well, I don't want to be antagonistic or anything. So, on with the show.
Thank you. I want to thank Lisa, Hippie51, for putting the video up, saying that it wasn't me. Nancy Leold. This is the real Nancy Leold. If you have any of that garbage on your channel page under comments with all the drama and YouTube gossip, whatever it is, and it has my name on it, it was not me. Those of you who know me know that I would not leave comments like that. And I don't know if you block that person, if you block me, or what happens. So a letter has gone out to YouTube. This has to stop. It's one after another. Trevor, if that is your real name, Trevor Rigger, or whoever you are, it must take some knowledge of computers to be able to do such a thing, to clone accounts. Why don't you take that knowledge and put it to good use? Excuse me. Why don't you create something for the good of people with the knowledge that you have? Or get a real account. Make some real friends. Lord knows you need it. I just want to apologize again to everybody for the inconvenience. And like my sister Bugs and Mug, who left a nice little message on my page this morning, it's time for some real magic. Watch out, Trevor.
Hello, Phil Chupa here, and I'm just going to talk a little bit about what happened recently to me at cloning. And a little background is, REM phase cloning is they take your consciousness while you sleep and put it in a clone in the cloning center. And as soon as you hit the REM phase of sleep, and you have to stay there until you wake up. They tell people a lot of different BS. It's that it's the fifth dimension, seventh dimension, Nirvana, Shangri-La, a time stutter, singularity. They say that it's another dimension, or that it's lucid dreaming, or the astral plane. It's not. It's you're just in a cloning center, and they're using MKUltra visual and audio effects to make you see what they want. Now, they've been doing this to me probably my whole life, but now they see me talking to Donald Marshall, and I go to the same cloning center he does now. And I know it's real because I've seen, one time I've seen the seating arrangement, the stadium seating, around a large, extremely large widescreen. And it's real. I don't know what to tell you. But what's been happening to me is, the other night I had two experiences. One, I woke up and went to another one. So I went back to sleep. The first one was, there was something going on where I had a mission or task, and I was flying a plane. It's very vivid, very intense. Never flown a plane. And I was going to a stadium to try to prevent something. And with me was actress Ellen Page. Now, I don't know if it was really her, or if it was just visuals, but she was helping me, and the plane went down. We got another plane, propeller plane, and I was flying it, and it was extremely intense, avoiding buildings and things to try to get there. And we got there, and we had to get in past security, and she helped me get into there, and I don't remember if I achieved my goal or whatnot, but it was very intense. And I never just have dreams about celebrities. I don't think they're all that great anyway. And I woke up from that, and stayed up for a few hours and went back to sleep, and they put me in another one. And it was in my room. There's stairs going down, steps, and in the scenario they put me in, the steps kept going down into a vast underground labyrinth of, it looked like something what Donald Marshall explains as the underground of a deep underground military base. There's computers, it was vast, there was like elevators, different doors, long hallways, and there's these people, these four women, and they were trying to go on the computers, and I had a feeling for some reason that they were trying to alert the government or something, and I kept grabbing them and taking off the computer and saying, tell them to stop. And we were walking through the vast labyrinth of doors and elevators, and at the end of one elevator, something came out of it. Can't remember what it was, but then I turned and I saw a team of, I said this out loud, and I thought CIA. I don't know why I thought that. It was like a team of, they had riot gear and type of black ops wear on, and one of them slammed me down, and I saw who was, seemed to be the leader of it, and he didn't have a helmet on. It was, it looked just like that actor Scott Wolf. This was on a lot of different shows. It was on Party of Five, I think, first. And what they did was they slammed me down, and they took a long needle, long needle, connected to a tube, and they jammed it into my lower left abdomen, my stomach, on the left side. And it hurt. It hurt a lot. That's the first time I felt pain there. And they started to suck out my blood or fluid or whatever through the tube, and I could see it. I could see it coming out. And man, that really hurt. And I just thought it was weird, and then I woke up. It's the first time I've felt pain there, and it was a really vivid scenario. And last night it was a blur. I'm not sure what happened, but that's what happened the previous night. And I'm going to make another video shortly here about the real problem, which is body snatching. Okay, thank you.
Your mind, you need it all me. Absolutely.
You know, if you go to Disney World, for instance, down there in the Haunted Mansion, you see the hologram, right? Oh, you know how to make a hologram. Well, our scientists have learned how to make people. They call them synthetics. Are you familiar with those?
Well, actually, we just interviewed John Lear, and he was talking about being in an audience in which they were given a lecture by a guy that they thought was real and found out later was he was a hologram.
Well, it's a synthetic. A synthetic's when you touch their skin, it feels like plastic almost. That's the latest technique. The old techniques, if you guys can rent a video, the boys from Brazil, rent it. Because in it, it gives you the exact way how our government's been making people.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, come
and the
on.
Soviets have a different method called...
I mean, making people, meaning temporary people?
No. Walking, talking ones.
Meaning through genetics? You're not talking about that?
Well, let me tell you. The movie shows it, but I'll share it with you right now.
All right.
All I need to do is take two cells off of your body. Yours.
Uh-huh.
We give them a small electrical charge. I'm just they'll act like a fertilized egg. If I got a fertilized egg, all I need is a receiver in order to make it. So they were hypnotizing women, you know, said they were being invaded by aliens. And the fetus starts growing, right? Needs food. Well, they can use cows and sheep, too. Again, a food source, that's all we need. After about 14 weeks, all of a sudden that fetus is gone. Because they've learned to take, that's when the fetus starts developing its own blood supply. Then they've used a pituitary hormone extract that they have, which accelerates the being that grows. And the original technology was given to our government by the Greys. Now, the reason was that our scientists were all excited because we could have spare parts. If you need a heart or a liver or anything, you won't have any rejection. It's your own DNA, right?
Okay, because theoretically, if we have overpopulation, we don't need more people, right?
But the so-called elite are selecting on who they want to have around anyway, so if we want to keep people going as long as we can. I talked to the doctor that was working on regeneration of Castro, for instance.
Right.
On the DNA sequencing. And they're just learning about this.
Well, my understanding is that a lot of presidents have already been replaced.
That's right.
Yeah,
I don't think...
They look old, but they basically...
I'll give you something to ponder. Get some old videos of George Bush when he first came into office. Look at the person and listen to him speak. Look at his actions and listen to his everything that there. Now, it's a lot easier to put somebody out in front to act as a, you know, even Bush did. He had somebody else that was up there acting like he is and look like it. Even Hitler had a, you know, he had his stand-in. In fact, his stand-in was the one that they found in the ground over in Germany. I mean, Hitler and Eva and the dog and 14 other people got aboard a plane and flew down to Barcelona, Spain. You were aware of that. And then ended up in Antarctica or in Swabenland and then died a few years ago in Brazil.
That's what we heard. That's
I have all the documents from our own government.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have a contact, one
and
of our
Stalin asked for the, you know, they tried to burn the body and he got the body back and he said, wait a minute, different ears and the testicles were different and everything else. So they knew it wasn't Hitler.
But is it a clone or not?
Oh, now you know we're going about cloning. Cloning techniques, since 1938, they've been making clone people. There's 8 countries making clones. I have a doctor friend
okay, but
and
I
all it does
know where
is treat the clones.
Where do you get your information?
I get it from some of the people that are willing to come forth, and they talk to me because they hope I'll put the information out because they always got 2 people following them and they may be killed. If I start talking about cloning too much, the people that get involved into that disappear on it. So I don't go into too many more details. But there is information that's available. And it, more and more of that's coming on the line. I just told you, go rent the movie.
Okay, Boys from Brazil.
Yeah, and you'll see the whole technique on what they show it to you in different places. So you can imagine what it's going on.
Okay, so...
Now, let's go to the next step because this is the most important part.
All right.
If your physical reality that you have, based on this physical life that you have, this dream, is made up of the experiences that is impregnated on your body and in your mind, consciously, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your soul memory is another thing. It goes back whatever time that you elected to be in this incarnation for whatever reason. Now let's show you the division on these things. Since the body is very physical, and we just got you making a physical being in a few months for spare parts, they said, now we've got the perfect deal. How can we have that work better? Well, if you go to the hospital today and get an encephalogram, what's that? That's the memory of your conscious mind. It's on the CD. Let's download it on this being. Now we got a walking, talking duplicate that has the total memory that you have because we just took it off of your own mind.
Okay. It's like Blade Runner, the android.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. The only thing is that it's like this DVD recorder. Sometimes you have glitches in it. So you have to have them tuned up occasionally or redone them. And so we take them to Camp David or there's a wing at Bethesda Hospital to just tell you. If you go down there and check, you'll find the nurses, if they're willing to come forth, they'll tell you they work on those people and they call them the others. I thought it was interesting. They're people. Remember, these people can think and act, but they don't
sure.
have soul. That's also prophesized.
Right,
soulless
that's
beings.
True. That's true.
Now we have another agenda that's going on, so you have to be careful of all this. There are many extraterrestrials that would like to be in on the game right now, so they can sometimes will come into these physical beings that we've made to manipulate them.
I see.
So
okay.
Now you have a combination effort that you have to look at and discernment. Mm-hmm. You have to discern what the game is. Well, this figure that most of the leaders we have in the world have been bought and paid for or created to think a certain way. In the world.
Mm-hmm. You grow old and you keep holding. Step 10. Depositing clones in a library. Creating a clone library is important for just one reason, so that you can find your clones when you need them. Maybe your colleague wants to continue your project, or you publish your results, and somebody requests a clone. In times like that, it is very satisfying to know where your clones are. I keep the information about my clone library in the Excel spreadsheet. I assign each of my clones a number, which is stored in the Excel file along with their clone name, description, the name of the parental vector, date created, primer names, and whatever other information I find relevant. For each clone, I prepare two 2 ml screw cap tubes with clone name and number. In one of the tubes, I am going to put the DNA, all 100 microliters that I looted from the mini prep. And in the second tube, I will store the E. coli culture. The one that we saved earlier today, right before starting the mini prep protocol. In this case, I will use 900 microliters of E. coli culture. And in addition, I will put 100 microliters of dimethyl sulfoxide, or DMSO, which will serve as cryoprotectant for the E. coli cells. Here is the original DMSO bottle, and here is an aliquot that I use on an everyday basis. I will mix the E. coli culture with DMSO by flipping the tube over a couple of times. I will put the 2 ml library tubes into two boxes that I prepared here, a -80 box for the E. coli and -20° box for DNA. The DNA box goes into -20° freezer, and the E. coli culture box goes into -80° freezer. Thank you.
I just wanted to make a video. I was thinking earlier about the time when I was young that I defeated my doppelganger, you know, evil twin. And it's something that I think about a lot because it was sort of a significant event in my childhood. But something that I don't know, I think I've told a few of my friends a story, but it relatively is sort of like a personal memory of childhood. But I was 5 or 6 at the time, and maybe 7. And a new kid had moved in across the street, and his name was also Brandon. And he had brown hair, similar build, you know, little kids, skinny little kids, and about the same age. And so it freaked me out that he was named Brandon. And I remember it's like this was the first person that I had met that had the same name as I do. And since my name is Brandon, you know, it took me until about 6 or 7 before I met somebody, because it's not, you know, not an uncommon name, but not a common name at the same time. So Brandon was really, really mean. He was just so mean. And he also had been run over, I guess. I was trying to think of a way to put that more eloquently, but no, he had been run over by his parents when he was younger. And so sometimes he needed a wheelchair, but also most of the time not. Like, he could walk around without crutches or anything. And this is sort of where things became a problem, because he would come over into our yard and eat this rhubarb that somebody had planted at some point. I don't know why somebody planted rhubarb. Nobody, like, harvested it or anything. But he would come over and he would sit there and he would eat the rhubarb. And this upset me greatly at the time. You know, one, because he was really mean and I didn't really want him in my yard. And two, you know, little kids, like, I didn't want to eat the rhubarb. I didn't even really want to go over by the rhubarb because there were ants that lived by the rhubarb and I didn't want to play over there anyway. But, you know, that's my rhubarb in my yard, man. You can't just come over whenever you feel like it. You gotta, like, maybe ask permission, something like that. He'd always come over and eat the rhubarb, and one day everything came to a boiling point. It's like the third, fourth time that, like, he'd come over, and, like, I had tried everything my little child brain could think of to just make him not eat the rhubarb without being mean, like telling him to just, like, get out of my yard, man, don't eat my rhubarb, because I wasn't a brat like that. This time, though, whenever I tried to get up the guts to become a little ballsier, you know, a little more out there, and I think I just told him, like, hey, you should leave, my mom says you can't do that, something like that. This enraged him. Somehow, nearby, there was a brick, and in all fairness, it was, like, half a brick. He grabbed half a brick, and he got up, and he took off after me, and I just remember running so hard, just with my back turned, so I don't even know how close he was, but I can hear him pounding and probably yelling. He had the brick. And this is the only time in my life that I've ever experienced even something remotely close to my life flashing before my eyes. But I just remember being extremely terrified, and there was, like at that moment of action, like something, I don't know, that my life flashed before my eyes, I don't know. But he threw it, and he missed, obviously, and I don't know exactly by how much he missed. I remember the neighbor girl said that it was really close, but who knows. But definitely he was like 3 or 4 feet behind me, and he threw it, and if he threw it, like, he actually threw it like I knew he was going to, probably missed me, not by all that much. I ran across the street, Mom, Brandon just threw a brick at me. Well, everybody, all the parents were there. They were having, like, a grill out. So you put my parents on the spot, you know, like, it's weird to think about. I don't know what you do as parents out there, like, when your kid comes up and is like, that other kid was mean to me, and that parent's, like, right there, you kind of, like, a little bit of awkward situation. So they didn't really do anything at the time, and I left, which probably, on some levels, messed me up a little bit, you know, like, somebody throws a brick at me, and, like, I'm terrified, and my parents are kind of like, yeah, no, you're fine, don't worry about it. Yeah, I'm sure consciously I knew that, like, that's why they were, like, kind of weird about it, because the other parents were there. So I'm sure it didn't, like, give me a complex, but it was pretty intense. That was the incident. And this is my revenge. So at this point, you know, it's a problem. He's trying to get in my yard, he's eating my rhubarb, he's throwing bricks at me, he's trying to take over my life, you know? And I got a pretty sweet bike and some He-Man action figures that are pretty cool and some Ninja Turtle action figures, but some of them got eaten by the lawnmower from playing in the yard. But man, he's not going to take my stuff, you know? So one day my mom told me about how rhubarb leaves are poisonous to horses. And I was vaguely aware that they were poisonous to humans, maybe. I think at the time, really, because she grew up with horses, so she was just musing about rhubarb leaves. And that same day, or recently, I had also learned about reverse psychology, which seems dumb, but like I said, I was like 6 or 7 at the time, so it was pretty a pretty novel idea. So anyway, of course, like the day after he threw this brick at me, he's back in the yard eating the rhubarb. So I went out there, and I'm sure you can probably put 2 and 2 together. I convinced him that it would be a bad idea for him to eat the leaves of the rhubarb, you know, because they're poisonous to horses. You know, don't eat the leaves, man. Don't eat the leaves. You can eat the stalks, you know, but don't eat the leaves. So of course, what did he do? He ate the leaves, and I don't remember ever really hearing about it. But I made a list. I went to the Wikipedia entry for rhubarb, and I made a list of this, of what happens if you eat rhubarb leaves, and I guess you have to eat a good amount, but he was definitely shoving some handfuls in there. And I also drew a dragon a rat dragon on the page too, but that's not important to rhubarb. Okay, we got breathing difficulty, burning mouth and throat, coma, eye pain, kidney stones. This is weird because they throw in, like, the worst ones right after, like, oh, burning mouth, okay, all right, breathing difficulty, yeah, he's probably cool, coma, whoa, eye pain, whatever, kidney stones, nausea, not so bad, seizures, pretty bad, weakness, again, I wouldn't worry about it, red urine, that was the biggest one, I even put a question mark after, red urine, and vomit, so I guess the whole point of this is, if you're having problems with your doppelganger, you know, don't fight them if you see them, because that fight will just be so epic that it will spill over onto the street, on top of buses, you know, in the rain, on top of buildings. Doppelgangers will go there. They will bring you there quick. So I much prefer, you know, a sneakier method, you know, try to outsmart them, because they, like I said, they've been out there training, you know, waiting to take over your life. So they're serious business, they're ready to fight. You gotta outthink them, and that's how you defeat your doppelganger.
There are places on Earth untouched by modern times. Religious beliefs and superstitions, customs and traditions cling stubbornly to a time long past. The people of this tiny farming community in southwest China have long viewed one of the villagers with mixed feelings. Chang almost always works alone, possibly because he is ashamed to be seen by others, possibly because others fear seeing him. As the only son in the family, he is responsible for the support of his mother and father. Superstition surrounds him. He is marked by deformity. At birth, his father considered killing him, but his mother prevented it. His arranged marriage collapsed when his bride-to-be saw him for the first time on their wedding night. One day, a medical team from Kunyan University Hospital comes to see Chang. Chang's mother nervously acknowledges the introduction of the renowned surgeons who have come to see her and talk about her son. She hails Chang to come and talk with the visitors. Shy as always, frightened, and ashamed to face the strangers, Chang approaches the surgeons. For the first time, they see his incredible condition. Chang has 2 heads. The doctors take Chang to the Kunyan University Hospital, a 6-day journey from Chang's village. They examine Chang and discover that Chang's other head was an undeveloped twin that had somehow become entangled with Chang's body. The second head, doctors believe, had been meant to be another person. The theory is confirmed by the existence of a slight hump on Chang's back, still another part of the undeveloped twin's body. Test of his sight, sense of taste, and hearing show expected impairment on the right side of his face. Perhaps the most startling discovery is the physical connection between the action of both heads. Medical teams suspect that Chang's twin is an intergrowth sharing in every respect Chang's autonomic nervous system. The laboratory tracking begins to define Chang's connection to his twin. A startling discovery is made in the course of testing. Chang's twin, in fact, has its own primitive brain. The unique set of problems posed by Chang's operation brings together some of the finest medical minds in China. Their objective is to separate and remove Chang's undeveloped twin. Perhaps the most delicate step is isolating the second brain from interaction with Chang. The most critical is the deep incision that will remove the unwanted twin. Several weeks later, the bandages are finally removed, and Chang sees himself for the first time without his twin head, as a normal human being. It has been almost 4 months since he left his village. There has been little news said of the operation or its success. When Chang finally returns, his mother sees him for the first time without his deformed head. It is a profound moment of joy for both mother and son.
Santa, your host. Tonight or today, times three. You're listening, rather, you have been listening to the Distract and Disable program. I'm pretty sure that I'm me at this point, I think. I might have come out intact. The good news is that Planet Abu is looking good. Real good. Something like a sunset. Several suns, but a sunset. Hot. Very hot. Keep listening to WGXC. And visit the WGXC archives for all things Distract and Disable. And also www.distractanddisable.blogspot.com. We'll catch you next time. Until then, from Planet Abu, it's me, Glue.